Welcome to this reading of City View. I'm Barbara Martin. City View is an alternative monthly published in Des Moines, and I'll be reading the fourth episode from the month of February 2024 of City View. And first, I'm going to look at Center Stage by John Busby, From Stage Famine to Performance Feast. It's time to sally forth and appreciate what's happening on stage, says John. February stages. Come to vibrant life, enticing winter dwellers from their cozy confines. A tantalizing range of shows spans from classic to comedy to musical to children's theater as the region's talent focuses on a bounty of shows to savor. Ballet Des Moines even brings another world premiere to the stage as they continue their nationally acclaimed engagement of new patrons to the powerfully expressive language of movement. Acclimating to winter weather has happened. Now it's time to sally forth and appreciate what's happening on stage. The diversity of regional productions being offered suggests that companies are doing excellent work at not only listening to what their audiences desire, but also what fits into a well-rounded regional offering of shows. Our Town, Equus, Company, The Odd Couple, female version, and Les Miserables, anchor the February shows. An eclectic selection of drama, musicals, and comedy. Our Town graces the Playhouse stage. It was created by Thornton Wilder in 1938. Described by Edward Albee as the greatest American play ever written, it presents the fictional American town of Grover's Corners through the everyday lives of its citizens. I have always had a great appreciation for this script and how it resonates with audiences. My nephew, T.J. Sullivan, or Joe Crowell, made his Broadway debut in the 2002 production starring Paul Newman. A sixth production of Our Town on Broadway is planned for later this year. This show should be on everyone's bucket list of five performances to see, and the Playhouse production should be a gem. Our Town is set in the early 1900s, but it's an enduring play because it reminds us of what makes us human and what we must soak up every wonderful moment of our lives while we can, shares its director, Katie Merriman. It is simple, beautiful, and meant for anyone and everyone to hear. With a boldness that reflects the spirit of Tallgrass Theater's annual Dream Project, Equus is Peter Schaefer's story of a psychiatrist who attempts to treat a young man who has a pathological religion fascination with horses. Nominated in 1975 for five Tony Awards, winning Best Play and Best Direction of a Play, this production is not for young people nor the faint of heart, but is for cultural adventurers and connoisseurs of great playwriting. Any use of recorded devices during this show is strictly prohibited due to the show's nudity and content. Quote, it fits perfectly with our Sarah Frank and Jack Balcom dream project, or Balcom, says Thomas D. Prine, who's the Tallgrass artistic director. I fondly remember a deep discussion that I had with Jack and Sarah about this script while TTC was still producing shows at Rex Mathis Auditorium. Restrictions with that space forced Tallgrass to wait until they moved to their new Black Box Theater, a performing hall perfectly suited for the thought-provoking journey that Schaefer's script takes its audiences. Storming Into Town are two national Broadway tours at Des Moines Performing Arts. Company is the winner of five Tony Awards, including Best Revival of a Musical, which, as Variety says, strikes like a lightning bolt. It's brilliantly conceived and funny as hell. Cameron McIntosh's timelessly irreversible Les Miserables will always be an exhilarating experience, whether for the first or 51st time. Two great family shows are on the docket, perfect for getting the young ones out to experience live theater as presented by their peers. These familiar stories will give parents and grandparents a chance to chat about the stories beforehand and lead to lively discussions afterwards. CAP, or Class Action Productions Theater, begins with The Music Man Jr. to Life on Stage, and Des Moines Young Artists Theater presents the musical adaptation of Finding Nemo Jr. Both shows are a shorter presentation length, suited for the less patient and younger patrons of the arts. These two companies have become springboards for many students to engage in learning about theater arts, whether as patrons, actors, or in production roles. Spicing up this short month long on live performance arts are several one-off gems. Ballet Des Moines, under the artistic direction of uber-talented Tom Mattingly, gifts the region with a world premiere Valentine. Love Letters, a pop-up company, once in a while productions, raises awareness through their production at The Garden. The Vagina Monologues, the irreverent, irrepressible comedy of Dixie Longate, returns for another run of hilarity at the Temple Theater and will reverberate with gales of laughter in her Dixie's Never Wear a Tube Top while riding a mechanical bull. Add a script reading and some Broadway karaoke, and this month will deliver plenty of chances to shake off the winter doldrums through a wealth of performing arts entertainment. And now Lunch With by Jim Duncan. This is Tim and Wendy O'Brien. They are horse people with a challenging love story. Because it's St. Valentine's month, we asked them to lunch, and they chose Ted's Coney Island on Ingersoll's stalwart that occupies the iconic International House of Pancakes building that it succeeded. Ted's has been around Des Moines since 1927 and offers drive-through and sit-down services. Over chili, heroes, salads, and Graziano sausage sandwiches, we talked about their against-the-odds marriage. Tim and Wendy suffered the ultimate challenge to love. Wendy backed up her car in the driveway without seeing her daughter behind it. At the time, we were told that over 90% of couples who go through anything like that break apart, said Wendy. Our bond got stronger. We had a surviving son to raise, said Tim. And he was devastated about losing his sister, Wendy added. People grieve differently. Tim threw himself into work, and Wendy took time off to commiserate. Many of their friends worried that they wouldn't make it. After all, they got married in a fever. We met in 1979 in Phoenix, even though we both grew up in Des Moines. Wendy opened a spaghetti works there, and I was working as a carpenter, said Tim. While they were dating, Wendy opened a place in Tucson. We would meet every weekend in Rustler's Roost, halfway between Phoenix and Tucson. There was an Indian casino with an ATM. A few years later, Tim was transferred to Sacramento. I didn't want to go. Then one day I opened the shower curtain and Tim is there saying, I am going to Sacramento even if we are married. All I said was, worst proposal ever. We ran off to Vegas and got married at the Little White Chapel, just like at all of the stereotypical movies. We passed on the Elvis package. We only had two witnesses, our best friends, said Wendy. Our wedding package included a choice of a bottle of champagne or a wedding video. We wanted the video, but my best man had already taken the bottle of champagne. Our friends posted an over-under number on our marriage, 3.5 years, Tim recalled. That was because I was a wild woman then, Wendy interjected. We honeymooned in Laughlin. At the time, 1985, Laughlin was just pontoon boats and casinos. Nothing like today, said Tim. On our way home, we were so tired that we didn't know that we were going in the wrong direction until we saw a sign saying Los Angeles, 100 miles. A week later, we moved to Sacramento. A tire blew just as we entered the city. Friends from Bend came to our reception there, Wendy remembered. Okay, they spent 7 years in California's capital city when it was booming. Both took the real estate exam. Tim passed it on the first try, but quickly realized I was the worst salesman in California. Wendy had a harder time with the exam, but did well in the business. Tim built houses and Wendy sold them. What brought them back to Des Moines? Schools and family. I graduated from Valley High School and Tim went to Dowling. We knew son TJ would get a far better education here than in Sacramento, Wendy recalled. The main thing that carried over from Sacramento is that we both were still 49ers fans, added Tim. Psychologists believe that the presence of animals help people get through tragedies. Living with animals prepares them better because one gets used to animals passing on. Wendy is a lifelong horse person, a serious one. Both her mother and grandmother were too. Her grandmother was the first female horse trainer at Madison Square Garden's National Equestrian Championships. Her mom owned a stable with 50 horses. Hardest job I ever had was moving the horses to Grand West after the stable caught fire. I grew up on the road. We would be away from horse shows Wednesdays through Sundays. It was a kind of gypsy life, and I didn't have time to learn how to swim until I was 26, Wendy said. Her first job back in Iowa was at Jester Park Riding Stables. Yeah, I shattered my wrist early on, but I still gave trail rides there from 1995 to 97. Campers like to ride, but we got $10 per ride, and that barely covered our insurance. It was an interesting place for trail rides. And once I had a blind woman. Another time I had a lady who had was too heavy to mount a horse by herself. We had 10 horses, and one of them was a biter. He got his mouth stuck full of a stirrup. The best thing about that job was Tim learned to ride, Wendy remembered. TJ became a successful ultimate fighting competitor. And his son is now excelling at wrestling. Of course, Tim and Wendy are their biggest fans. It seems like the Scions inherited the O'Brien grit. Tim and Wendy ride together today, and they still make gypsy jaunts to horse shows. And here are a couple of book reviews, courtesy of Beaverdale Books, both written by Julie Goodrich. The first one, the book is entitled The Parliament. I'm a huge fan of parallel stories, books that flutter back and forth between two worlds, two people's lives, or the past and the future. Here, in this gorgeous, deliciously dark, modern fairy tale, the author gives us two stories in one, in the best way. A book within a book. Madeline, Mad Purdy, returns to her hometown to teach a group of teenagers at the local library. This is certainly not her forte, as she much prefers being alone at home. But when the library is surrounded by thousands of killer owls intent on tearing the trapped group to pieces, A New Side of Mad Blooms in the Midst of the Terror. Reading to the kids in her care to keep them calm as they look for a way out. The second story nested in the book, The Silent Queen, provides the perfect accompaniment to claustrophobic horror and characters' experience. This is a survivor's tale at its heart, a rich, gorgeously written story full of grief and strangeness, but above all, hope. I loved flipping through real life and the fairy tale. It stretched the already taut tension while pulling new threads in the narrative. A perfect balance, says Julie Goodrich. And then the second book is 13 Ways to Kill Lulabelle Rock. And this is 240 pages, $19. I don't think I'm the only person who's ever wished for a clone. It would be so nice to send a body double off to shovel the driveway while I stay warm inside with some coffee and a book. But what happens after the driveway is shoveled? Would that clone go off to read a different book? Does she need her own cup of coffee? Is she now a different person with a set of memories that I'll never have? These questions and more abound in this speculative thriller. In the riotous town of Bubble City, the richest and most famous have portraits, which are clones to ensure that they are seen and involved in the dizzyingly complex social scene. Lulabelle Rock has 12 such beings wandering around, building unique lives and divergent personalities in surprising ways. When she creates a 13th copy with the sole purpose of killing the others, a wild ride ensues, full of questions about personhood and the limits of humanity. A brilliant premise with a brisk pace and razor-sharp writing that never falters. This book is highly recommended for readers who can never get enough of the question, what if? And now to something more personal. We look at People and Pets, and this is written by Jackie Wilson, and entitled Love for Luca. A litter of kittens, along with their street cat, Mama, was found nearly 6 years ago under a busy highway bridge. Hope Animal Rescue of Iowa rescued the mom and kittens and then offered them up for adoption. One black kitten, which looked like it was struck by lightning, caught the attention of Sarah Muller, and she adopted him. The kitten, formerly named Bob Seger, was renamed Luca. Muller explains that she learned about a dog named Puccini and then searched for Italian names. I came across the name Luca and thought that he looked like a suave Italian mob boss, she recalls. Muller wanted a pet ever since living on her own. She considered getting a dog, yet at the time, a long work commute meant little time to care for it. As a child, she had a cat briefly, but her dad was allergic to it and they couldn't keep the pet. So she liked cats and searched on the Pet Finder app, specifically looking for a black cat. Black cats have a bad reputation and don't get adopted. A lot of people think that black cats are bad luck or scary, she says. As she researched black cats, she discovered that they are the least likely pet to be adopted. I knew I wanted to go in that direction, she says. Luca likes to curl up, but has his zombie moments. I love that he's feisty and fun, but never aggressive. He likes to wake up at 2 a.m., running laps around my head, she laughs. Because she works remotely with a lot of time at home, she says Luca is privileged. In addition, 3 out of 4 of her co-workers also have black cats. quote, a team meetings at the team meetings online. All of our black cats hang out together, she says. As she acquired Luca from Hope Animal Rescue, she feels it's important to adopt. Sometimes the ARL has no place to put cats. There are so many stray cats. There's no need to shop. Adopt instead, she recalls the mantra. If people are unsure of cat ownership, they can test the waters by fostering. Being a foster cat mom or dad offers a temporary home until the cat is adopted. Muller is also an advocate for pets with owners who are in domestic violence situations. Victims often can't bring pets with them to shelters. Red Rover places animals in crisis in the interim when the humans are struggling. Often people forget that animals are impacted by domestic violence and homelessness, she says. Muller is delighted with Luca. He's obviously the cutest cat. He's chill. I couldn't ask for more, she reflects. Except at 2 a.m., if he would just go back to sleep and not run around. For more information on fostering cats, visit hopeanimalrescueofiowa.org. Or for resources and assistance for pets in domestic violence situation, visit redrover.org/get-help/. Well, that does it for this episode of City View for February of 2024. And thanks for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. If you have any questions about this or other IRIS programs, you know you can always call 515-243-6833. Thanks again for listening.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date. Trapped beneath the permafrost and under the deep ocean floor that surrounds continents is enough natural gas to power humankind for thousands of years. This natural gas, mostly methane, is frozen in water in a form we call methane hydrates. The methane came from decaying organic matter or migrated up from deeper natural gas deposits and was then trapped in very high concentrations in frozen layers of sediment at high pressures. When brought to the surface, the hydrates melt, releasing around 160 times their volume in natural gas. This sounds like a very promising energy source, and companies and countries, especially those with limited resources like Japan, are trying to recover the gas. But test plants have produced very little. This is partly because processing methane hydrates is a new and difficult engineering challenge, and partly because we know very little about them. To study methane hydrates, scientists have built special high-pressure, low-temperature labs where they can be kept in their frozen state. One innovative project in Alaska is trying to pump in liquid CO2 under high pressure to liberate the gas. If successful, this new process could make methane hydrate deposits not just an energy source, but a place to sequester carbon. Eventually, engineers will probably figure out cost-effective, low-impact ways to produce methane from methane hydrates. One more reason that natural gas will likely play a larger role in our energy future. I'm Scott Tinker, keeping it cool on Earth Date.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more Earth Date stories at earthdate.org.
Exploring Science and the Sea. To keep tabs on the health of whales, marine biologists sometimes catch the snot from the whales' blowholes, a mixture of water, mucus, and other substances. And in recent years, they've found a new way to catch it with drones. The small remote-controlled vehicles fly above a whale and wait for it to clear its lungs. A plate or dish then catches some of the material expelled through the blowhole. Biologists check the blow for the whale's DNA, hormones, algae, bacteria, and other substances. That's one of several ways in which drones are contributing to marine research. They can collect samples or snap pictures for a fraction of the cost of more conventional techniques and allow researchers to keep an eye on marine critters without spooking them. One project uses drones to study waves and their interaction with the atmosphere, while another uses them to count gray seals on the coasts of New England and Canada. And yet another project used drones to study all of Ridley sea turtles in Costa Rica. Researchers wanted to study the nesting behavior of these rare creatures. The drones revealed that the turtles congregated in groups that were a good bit larger than expected. Drones still aren't perfect tools. Small ones have limited range and payloads, while big ones can be expensive. And there are restrictions on how and where they can be flown. Even so, they can give scientists a bird's-eye view of the oceans and coasts and help them with such icky tasks as catching whale snot. Science in the Sea, a production of the University of Texas Marine Science Institute, is on the web at scienceandthesea.org. I'm Holly Brawley.